So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 5, Talad the Saintly Son Hiranyakashipu, text number 8.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Griham Anitam Ahuya Prasadam Daitya Yajaka Prashasya Shlakshnaya Vacha Samapichanta Samadhi Griham Nichamahuhya Prasadam Daitya Yajaka Prashasya Shlakshnaya Vacha Samapichanta Samabhi Griham Nityamahuhya Prasadam Daitya Yajaka Prashasya Shlakshnaya Vacha Samapichanta Samabhi. Manichamahuhya Haradam Vachayajaka Prashasya Shlakshnaya Vacha Samapichanta Samadhi Griham Manichamahuhya Paradam Daitya Yajaka Prashasya Shlakshnaya Vacha Samapichanta Samadhi Griham Nichamahuhya Paradam Daitya Yajaka Prashasya Shlakshnaya Vacha Samapichanta Samadhi Griham Manichamahuhya Piradam Daitya Yajaka Prashasya Shlakshnaya Vacha Samapichanta Samadhi.
Ladies,
Nichahuhya Paradam Daitya Yajaka Prashasya Shlakshnaya Vacha Samapichanta Samadhi.
Griham, to the place of the teachers, Shanda and Amarka.
Anityam,
brought.
Ahuya,
calling.
Praradam,
Pralad.
Daitshayajaka,
the priests of the demon Hiranyakashipu.
Prashasya,
by pacifying.
Shlakshnaya,
with a very mild
vacha
voice.
Samapichanta, they questioned Samadhi by very agreeable words.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
When Hiranyakashipu's servants brought the boy Prahlad back to the Gurukula, the place where the Brahmins taught the boys, the priests of the demons, Shanda and Amarka, pacified him. With very mild voices and affectionate words, they inquired from him as follows. Purport. Shanda and Amarka, the priests of the demons, were eager to know from Prahlad Maharaj who the Vaishnavas were. They came to instruct him in Krishna consciousness. Their purpose was to discover the names of these Vaishnavas. In the beginning, they did not threaten the boy because when threatened, he might not identify the real culprits. Therefore, they very mildly and peacefully inquired from him as follows.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Varakamala Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sriji Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarine
So, here we see that these demons, Shanda and Amarka,
they're speaking in very affectionate, sweet words. This reminds me of that Shakespearean line that one may smile and smile and yet remain a demon. So, how do you actually tell the demon from a devotee then? Even the demons can be nice sometimes, very mild and peaceful for their motive, you see. Sweet. The demon may sweet talk you, you see. So the demons can speak sweetly and the devotee speaks sweetly. How do you tell the difference between the demon and the devotee? Well, it's the subject matter. What are they speaking? What is the knowledge they are giving you, you see? The style of delivery may appear to be the same, but what are they actually telling you? You see, that makes a difference. The devotee, he will give you the teachings of Krishna. That's how you know. He will give you the teachings of Krishna. Not according to some speculation. But He will give you the teachings as they are given by Krishna. Evam parampara praptam mimam rajasya yovidu sakaleneha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. This knowledge was received by the chain of the Siddhic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. Okay. So, the devotee, he does not concoct anything. He doesn't add, he does not subtract. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita as it is. Someone may wonder, why there's so many Gitas, why this one is as it is? Because the other ones are Bhagavad Gita as it is not. The scholars are somewhat perturbed by that title. I met with a PhD of religion one time at Rice University in his office. He said, why as it is? I said, because it's different from the other Gitas. And I'll show you. I'll prove it to you. He had many Gitas on his shelf. I said, hand me that Gita there. I pointed at one randomly. Immediately I turned to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text number 34. You know that verse, Manmanama Mamadbhakta. So I was reading the translation. It seemed okay. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Offer obeisances and worship me. Become fully absorbed in me. And this way you will become me. Woo! What a deviation. You'll become me. Wow. Talk about it seemed like it was the same verse, but you get to the very end, and instead of you will come to me, you will become me. You see? So these are the demons. They want to be Krishna. They want to take that position. And it's embarrassing to say, but actually we were all in that same mentality. That's why we're in material bodies right now. We wanted to be Krishna. We were envious of Krishna, His position. That's why we took birth here, to try to imitate Krishna in this material world. That yes, I am the center of enjoyment. The whole universe revolves around me. This is the mentality of everyone taking birth here in the material world, except for the pure devotees who come to deliver us. You can see even a little kid. The kid comes from next door to play with him, and he's in his room. And the kid next door looks at this kid's toys, and the kid goes, mine, you see. Even a little child, he even thinks, I am the owner, I am the proprietor, you see. This false sense of proprietorship, which is seen even in little children, is the cause of all the turmoil in the world right now. Every bit of it. The ISIS crisis, the mass shootings happening every day now in the U.S., the pollution, the water pollution, the air pollution, the mind pollution, all of this is simply coming from this false sense of proprietorship. Therefore, this sense must be kicked out from our hearts, and we have to train everyone else how to kick it out of the heart. Kick it with boot. Get it out. You see? Krishna makes it very clear. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvanam shantam richtati. This is our peace formula. It is a very simple thing. If you will simply acknowledge that Krishna owns everything, therefore He is the rightful enjoyer of everything, and He is the best friend of all living entities, simply this simple formula will solve every problem the world has. If the leaders would simply take this simple peace formula, we can solve every problem. Economic problems, social problems, health problems, every single problem the world is facing right now can be solved by this one simple formula given by Krishna. But these leaders are so puffed up, they're so stubborn, they're so pig-headed, they won't listen to it. They won't take it. You see. Oh, we don't want to promote religion. You see. Look at the founding documents of the European Union. Is there any mention of God there? Nothing. It is an atheistic principle, the European Union. Therefore, it will not work. You cannot bring unity unless you put God in the center. You understand this point? If you don't put God in the center, then you will put yourself in the center. Or you will put your nation in the center, and that will never be unity. The only way we can have real unity is Isha Vasha, the God-centered conception. Some people are pushing forward in the name of God, but it's a sectarian conception, like the ISIS people. You see? Only Allah. If you're not a Muslim, we want to kill you. You see? This is not a scientific understanding of God. God has to be understood scientifically, not just sentimentally, that my way is the only way. They say God only has one name. That's absurd. My father was known by different names. My mother called him one thing, I called him another thing, his college buddies called him something else, his boss at work called him something else. He had so many different names. He's an ordinary man of this world. God only has one name? That's preposterous. How they can put this forward, you see? It's just covered nationalism. That's all it is. Covered. They used to use the name religion to promote their own political agendas. But that's not religion. Religion means to actually dovetail your consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness. There is indeed one source of all existence. And when you harmonize yourself, when you synchronize yourself, when you dovetail yourself with that supreme source of all existence, who is, by the way, a person, then you become tuned in to your actual self. Otherwise, you're living in a sense of false identity. No wonder people are frustrated. Everybody on this planet right now has a false sense of identity, except for a small handful of people who are Krishna conscious. Everybody has a false sense of identity. No wonder people are so frustrated trying to be happy. They're trying to be happy in a way which is impossible to be happy by gratifying the senses which is not them. You see, if you're hungry, and I say, here, stick your kurta in this bowl of sweet rice. Will that satisfy you? I'm very hungry, Prabhu. Here, just stick your kurta in the sweet rice. You'll be okay. No. You can't put your kurta in the sweet rice and become, get your appetite satisfied, you see? So in the same way, sense gratification is like sticking your kurta in the sweet rice. You don't get any satisfaction out of that. You can eat, sleep, mate, and defend from now until the end of the universe, and you're never going to actually be satisfied because it's not you. It's just the covering of the self. If you want actual satisfaction, the real you has to become connected with the real original you, the original person, Krishna. Not the original you, the original master of you, Krishna. So in this way, this Krishna consciousness message must be understood. It must be implemented in the world. Otherwise, it'll be, you know, they may speak very nicely like Shanda in America, but they're political speeches. But they are simply devious snakes. That's the fact. The devious snakes. Modern day politicians. Prabhupada says every politician should be a Mahabhagavat. Show me a Mahabhagavat politician nowadays. There's a little hope. There's actually a grand disciple of Prabhupada now who's in the U.S. Congress, so that's encouraging. Tulsi Gabbard. She's a grand disciple of Srila Prabhupada. She's in the House of Representatives now in Washington, D.C. So that's encouraging. We need to have more Krishna conscious people in government, you see, all over the world. All the high court judges should be wearing tilak. In every field, there should be Krishna-conscious people giving guidance, showing the example. Yad yad atarece shreshta tattareve tarojaya sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever a great man does, the common people follow in his footsteps, whatever standard he sets, by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So, are you supposed to be an ideal example? Bhakta so-and-so. or Bhaktam so and so. Are you supposed to be an ideal example? Is that just for the GBCs and the sannyasis and the temple presidents and the regional secretaries? No.
Anyone who takes shelter of this movement, anyone who takes shelter of Prabhupada's teachings, they are meant to come to this standard of being an ideal acharya. That their every thought, their every word, their every deed in all times, places, and circumstances purely manifests Krishna consciousness. You understand? Purely manifests Krishna consciousness. This is how we can change the world, by changing ourselves, giving up this, you know, want to be find my comfortable niche in ISKCON, to be, you know, coast along and to have an easy, comfortable life. No. Okay. This is a revolution. Prabhus, Matajis, this is a revolution. This is not a Sunday school picnic. It's a revolution. We have to change the world. That's our duty that Prabhupada has given us. We can't rest easy while people are out there killing the cows, murdering the babies. We can't sleep easily at night. We have to be thinking, what can I do to become more Krishna conscious, to preach more powerfully? How can we distribute more books? How can we attract more people? We have to be taxing our brains like crazy. How we can turn this world civilization around? It's heading towards destruction right now. It's our duty to turn the whole world around.
Prabhupada, please help us. Please help us. Please help us, Prabhupada.
So now I can ask if there's any questions. Yeah. Somebody can be my hearing aid. You be my hearing aid. Oh, you'll do it. Okay.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, as you said, you know, politician also be Mahabhagwat. This is what Prabhupada desires. But this is Kali Yuga, and over there also in India, politicians, they are encouraging cow slaughters and opposite four regulatory principles, those who are meant for Vaishnavas. So how we can expect, you know, that Mahabhagavata?
Well, there's only one way. See, now is the days of democracy. I mean, democracy? What is it? Democracy. So, we have to educate the voters so they will only elect Krishna conscious people. We have to educate the mass people so they will, when they go to the vote, is this a Hare Krishna man? Vote for him. If he's not Hare Krishna, forget him, you see. That'll be, you know, be the thing. If he's Hare Krishna, yeah, my vote. If he's not Hare Krishna, forget it. We have to educate the people to vote Hare Krishna. You see? We have a lot of preaching to do. We've got to educate millions and billions of people all over the world by mass book distribution, by powerful preaching, prasadam distribution, festivals, everything, media, everything we can possibly do. We have to bombard the people with Krishna consciousness so they finally get the message that I'm not this body, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. And then they'll vote, they'll only vote for Krishna conscious leaders. That's the only hope. Mass education is the only hope. Of course, Papa said class and mass. So, on one hand, we do mass education. We also have to, we want to reach the high class people also, the intellectual class. We want to preach in such a way that they'll become very, very, very attractive. Yes, this is very, very profound wisdom. You see. So Prabhupada said the mass and the class, both, we go after both of them aggressively. Yeah. The intellectuals, there's so much deviating the people. I went to one seminar when I was back in my brahmachari days. One seminar at the University of Florida. It was a seminar on the black holes in outer space.
And every science student, and every professor from every science department, when they were all there, about 3,000 people assembled to hear about the black hole in outer space. So then it came time for the questions and answers. I raised my hand and I said, is what you're saying a fact or is it a theory? And he said, I think it's a fact. Note the word I think. When I joined the ashram back with Vishnujan Swami in 71, we were told, if you said, I think, you got to go to the closet, Prabhu. You go to the closet. You don't say, I think, in the ashram. You go in the closet. I did it one time. I accidentally said, I think, so I went to the closet, did my tapa for a few minutes in the closet. But anyway, he said, I think. It's a fact. So a few more questions came in. Again, got my hand up, recognized again, and said, throughout the history of modern science, we have seen that one theory comes into popularity for some time, and then it's finally replaced by another theory. How do we know that your theory, this is actually a loaded question, how do we know that your theory will not be replaced by another theory? He actually bought the loaded question. He said, well, how do we know that your theory will not be replaced by another theory? He said, I hope it is, because then we will be making progress. Just see the rascal. He said, this is a fact. And when it's proven to be wrong, that will be the progress, and it's sure to happen eventually, that will be the progress of science. Everybody's applauding the great learned scientists. You see what kind of madness is going on? These so-called intellectuals, they're just word jugglers, sophisticated word jugglers is all they are. We have to expose these rascals so people don't blindly follow them like sheep or like cattle going to the slaughterhouse. You see what I'm saying? So we have to go after the mass and the class both. Next question.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna. He was stretching, he wasn't asked. Here's a question. Okay.
Hare Krishna. In the starting of the lecture, you mentioned that devotees also talk very sweet and demons also talk sweetly. But we can differentiate on the basis of subject matter. So my question is, sometimes we see even people who are demonic tendency, they also put up a garb of a saint and they can talk from the scriptures. No, and which will not be absolutely truth because they will then deviate. Subtle deviations. How to recognize that?
What's that? There are the Mayavadis talk very sweetly also. So you got to know the philosophy. Don't be carried away by sweet talk. You see, you have to know the philosophy. Actually, sometimes the pure devotee doesn't talk sweetly at all. Sometimes he's like a thunderbolt. Just like that story when Prabhupada went to MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Boston. You may know the story. Back in the early days, when he was still Swamiji. And Prabhupada was talking with a Mayavadi, and he was arguing. Prabhupada grabbed him by the shirt and he said, if it's all one, why don't you wear a cotton ball? He was shaking him by the shirt. Prabhupada became so intense. And the devotees were freaking out. They said, Prabhupada's losing his... Swamiji is losing his temperature. They called the cab. We've got to get him out of here. He's losing his control. They didn't understand his heaviness, you see. Of course, now we understand. When Prabhupada would be heavy, that would be the greatest mercy of all, you see. Thunderbolt is the greatest mercy of all, you see. So the Vaishnavas, they may speak very sweetly, like being, you know, massaged with a rose. Or they may be very heavy, like a thunderbolt. Prabhupada told us to be very heavy. You know that? He told us to be heavy. He said, you go village to village, town to town, and make Digvijay. You know, Digvijay is conquering Pandya. Make Digvijay that there is God. I can prove that there is God. Who are you who say there is no God? Come on. Prabhupada taught us to preach that way. That's exactly how he said it. Who are you who say there is no God? Come on! You see? So the devotee is sometimes very heavy. You see? Guru means heavy. If he simply talks sweet words, then you wonder, is he really a guru or not? Mayavadi gurus, they can twirl a flower very nicely in their hands and talk very sweetly. But a Vaishnava, he can be the most heavy and the most sweet. Sometimes heaviness is required. One time I was passing out sweets on the University Avenue in Gainesville. I had a nice basket full of Simply Wonderfuls. I'm going to bless everybody with a Simply Wonderful today. So one smart aleck hippie thought, ha ha, I'm going to get that Hare Krishna. He took his hand and went, wham, and he hit the basket and all the sweets went flying out in the street. So what are you supposed to do? You know, said, well, be tolerant more than a tree. No, I didn't think I should be more tolerant than a tree in that situation. I got very heavy with them. I mean, very heavy. I don't know if I dare even get that heavy now to show you how heavy it was. But I'll give you an approximation. I said, you better get out there and pick up all those sweets right now! Like that. I really threw a whammy on him. And you know what? It worked. He went, ah. And he ran out and he picked up in the middle of the street. The car, it was a red light. The cars were getting ready to roll in about 30 seconds. He ran out in front of all the cars in the middle of the intersection. He picked up all the sweets. So sometimes being heavy is the best thing you can do. You see? Sometimes being strong and heavy is the best thing you can do to pull people out of their, you know, bewildered state of, you know, serving the modes of nature. So, Vaishnavas can be sweeter than the sweetest and heavier than the heaviest, according to time, place, and circumstance. Ki jai. Any other questions?
Oh, here we go.
How to do academic education, which has word juggling, but at the same time utilize education in the service of the Lord. Well, you get in there and you learn their language so you can dismantle their pseudo-educational system eventually. It's like going to a foreign country. You go to Spain, you don't know Spanish, you learn Spanish. You become expert in Spanish. So that day comes, you can give eloquent speeches in Spanish language, you see. So in any field, whether it's physics, chemistry, philosophy, you can go into any field and learn the language very expertly. So when the time comes, now you're ready, you can dismantle their pseudo-educational system and establish what is real physics, what is real chemistry, what is real philosophy, you see. Whoever asked the question, nice question, whoever asked that. Very nice. Very, very nice question, yeah. Yeah, you learn their system very expertly, so you can go in and dismantle it and replace it with the true understanding of chemistry, physics, philosophy, astronomy, whatever it may be. Yeah.
Okay.
Sanskrit grammar also. I took a Sanskrit course one time. The professor told us it's all a myth. The Vedas are a myth. Just see the rascal. The Sanskrit teachers say Vedas are a myth. They teach you Vedas and they say it's all mythology. Just see the rascal then. So what's the what's their proof? They claim it's a myth, but that's actually dogma. You see? The trouble is, in academia, it's all dogmatic. It's all dogmatic. Simply some dogma going around the Sanskrit professors that it's all the Vedas are myth. Where's the proof that it's a myth? Can you prove it's a myth? You can't prove it's a myth. It's simply blind faith. We think it's a myth, we believe it's a myth, and therefore it's a myth. You see, so when we have devotees becoming Sanskrit scholars and establishing the authenticity, not the mythological nature of the Vedic wisdom, this is very good. In every field, we want to have Vaishnavas. Every field there should be Vaishnava scholars who have established the real truth, which is given coming from Krishna. Okay, anything else? Anything else? Your questions are great. I'm just really blissing out on your questions. Throw me a few more.
Give me a hard one. Give me a really tough one. Yeah.
Krishna is the supreme proprietor, enjoyer and controller. Regarding supreme proprietor, we understand there is no doubt. But he also says that this is dukhale aswastasam. So how we can enjoy dukhale? And there is no sign of his controlling the present time. So these two things are not telling with his declaration that I am supreme proprietor, supreme enjoyer, supreme controller.
Which one is your Kala, young? What is that verse mean? How does Krishna enjoy the material world? Well, that's no problem at all. He brings the whole spiritual world with him. He has a great time wherever he goes. He doesn't go alone. Radharani comes, all of his associates. Krishna can go anywhere and be in total bliss because he brings his whole entourage with him. You see. That's not he wanders alone like a gypsy in the material world. He brings his whole spiritual world with him wherever he goes. Next question. Well, it looks like the question well has run dry. So we thank you all very, very much for your attending Bhagavatam class today. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Always remain absorbed in thinking about, talking about, and following these divine principles that are coming through us through the mercy of His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.